Hello, and thank you for listening to the World Dreamer podcast, where we take popular stories and settings and turn them into tabletop RPGs. My name is Matt, and today we'll be delving into the world of the SCP Foundation. And here we are. As per usual, we have a couple guests. One returning guest for the first time, but still a new face. And for our new face, I'd say, can you just give us your name and, you know, what's your experience with SCP? How long you've been following it? How deep into it are you, etc.?
Yeah, well, my name's Nick, and SCP has been something that I don't know when I started getting into it, but I know I got into it before I knew what SCP was. Like, kind of like the good old creepypasta era of YouTube, you know?
Yeah.
It was just there, and I always thought it was real interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And we have our first returning guest, Spencer. Spencer, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, thank you, Matt.
That's good, that's good. How'd you get into SCP? What's your sort of level of experience with it?
So I heard about it like quite a while ago, actually, when I was in a scout troop and there was someone there who would talk about it a lot. So I knew a little bit secondhand from that, but I didn't actually start like looking at the entries and watching videos until like summertime this past year, I think, when Matt kind of nudged me in that direction. There's a good lore video site that I've been watching. Yeah, and yeah.
Yeah, there are a few out there. You can go looking. There are plenty to find.
Yeah, and I did play a sort of role-playing game within the SCP-verse once.
Oh, nice.
Well, it was yours.
Oh, right, yeah. Whoops.
You okay, Matt, if you're getting stuff?
I'm just going a little loopy. It's fine. But as far as me, I didn't actually know too much about SCP for a while. I think my basic extent was I knew what SCP-173 was. Like, I'd heard about that floating around a lot of stuff. Like, I knew some vague creepypasta stuff, and then I'd heard about 173. But I actually didn't really get into it until, I want to say, summer, like, 2 years ago. I'd heard about it on another podcast and then started researching it and got very, very deep in the weeds about it and, you know, brought some other people down with me, as Spencer can attest. But yeah, I think it's very fascinating. I think it's a really interesting sort of writing website and whatnot. And I think there's a lot of good potential for, like, world stuff to use, you know? I guess I asked this question at the beginning of the other two episodes, but I'll ask it again. Why are we talking about SCP? What makes SCP so interesting to the point that we kind of want to experience this world?
I really, really like the kind of eldritch horror aspect, and certainly the way that they actually write the entries is quite neat, kind of invites some degree of mystery. It doesn't always fill you in on every hole, and not every hole needs to be filled. You just fill it with your own kind of thoughts towards the matter. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. Nick, do you have some thoughts on why SCP?
Yeah, and I definitely agree with your point with how it's written. It's kind of like immersive, and it's like real life when you read it, you know?
Yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm. But not like actually. Really, there's so many SCPs that if you don't like one, you can always go on to the next. And not only that, but there's canons and there's tales. So it's not just a document site, but really it's just a full-formed like story world.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think part of the difficulty when adapting is the fact that there is no one concrete canon. But on the other hand, I think it's very helpful because it sort of allows an SCP-esque world to be very fluid and sort of can be shaped into whatever you want it to be. There are just these resources there to kind of help you with that.
I think the worlds and the stories that have longevity, there needs to be headcanon. The viewers have to make stuff up, and that really helps with the mysterious aspect, and it doesn't tell you all the answers.
Yeah, yeah, I 100% agree with that. And so as far as sort of designing this would go, I think a good place to start as any is with character creation and sort of how you would go about sort of making a character for an SCP-esque universe. Anyone have any initial thoughts?
I do wonder if, kind of thinking this over in my head, if you should make it so that pretty much all the characters are human at the start, or if, because if you made races, like, there's just so many possibilities that it would be difficult to, like, pin down enough and get people completely satisfied. So I wonder if just staying as humans for races, as far as races are concerned, is best idea.
Yeah, I think that's probably smart, because, like, yeah, there are people who are sort of protagonists in the world who are, you know, sort of, like, extreme and weird and have crazy powers, like people like Bright or Clef or some of the Mobile Task Force, but a lot of the people you really follow throughout the documents and articles and tales are kind of just regular people. Like, they're regular soldiers or scientists who are thrust into these crazy, unimaginable scenarios beyond all human comprehension. But I guess that also begs the question, how do you make a character who's just a regular person and still make them feel, like, compelling and fun to play, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm not the best person to talk about this, because I definitely prefer my fantasies and my science fiction. But you can make any normal person interesting. Because, like, you see a fantasy person or a sci-fi person, it's like, oh, that person just looks cool. While you look at a normal person, it's like, oh, that's a dude wearing a t-shirt and jeans. I don't care about him. So you really have to put in, like, work ahead of time. Like, who is this character? How will he act? Mm-hmm. Or she, or they. And, like, you gotta make them interesting personality and quirk-wise and stuff like that. And then, like most tabletop characters, you probably aren't attached to them on your first session or maybe even your second session. But the third session is when you start, like, whoa, I know who this character is now. But you can't just think that will happen. You gotta put in the work. So you gotta sit down and think, like, hey, why does my character feel this way? And what do they feel?
Yeah.
And in an SCP world, there's so many opportunities for your character to be drastically changed as well. So you don't even need fantasy races. Your character can change within an SCP world.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for things to happen. And I think when I was sort of thinking over by myself how this would work, a reference point I found myself using a lot as far as RPGs go was the Call of Cthulhu RPG that exists out there. And the way they sort of handle characters, and I think it's interesting here, is as you go on, there isn't really a level up system. You just sort of, you get some skills at the beginning of the game, and then you sort of further those skills by continually using them throughout the game. So, like, your skills are increasing throughout the game, but I think a big facet of Call of Cthulhu is your health never increases. You never, like, physically become harder to kill. You just sort of become better at sort of what you're setting out to do, and it's sort of easier to get that done before you die. And I think that's important here, to sort of give that sort of still sense of threat and humanity, and not just making you, like, in D&D, like, you're still, you know, technically, like, a regular fantasy racer species by the end of it, but you have enough, like, health and stats that you're basically a god. And I think it's important to sort of keep that sense of humanity here with SCP stuff, you know?
Yeah, and I hate, in, like, any RPG, video game, role-playing game, I hate bullet sponges. I want things to be deadly enough that you gotta worry about it, but not deadly enough that you get killed in one hit.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I mean, in Call of Cthulhu, and I feel like that RPG system is probably the closest to, like, a popular system that we can get to an SCP world.
Mm.
I feel like the idea of static health fits, especially with, like, there's a bunch of, like, healing SCPs that you could get your hands on. Like, I don't know any, like, off the hand, but I'm sure there's a bunch of
the first one I can think of is, I think it's SCP-500, I want to say.
It's the pills that heal anything, right?
Yeah, it's a ball of red pills that can cure any injury or ailment upon consumption. But in world, I think there's only, like, 50 of them in existence, and they don't know how to recreate them.
They planted them in a tree thing, and they were, like, less useful.
Yeah, they planted them in, like, the, like, tree thing, and it made like less useful versions. And then I think they put one through the clockworks and it created like a weird amulet that like heals you to a point and then like mutates you into a blob man.
Yeah, I like blob man.
Who doesn't love blob man?
Yeah, who doesn't love them? Yeah.
But we've brought up combat quite a bit. And outside just sort of the base mechanics of combat, I think an important thing to keep in mind with SCP-related stuff is that you're not usually directly fighting most of the SCPs because they can't really be killed or destroyed in a traditional sense by sort of what mortal men have. It's more so about finding out how to contain and placate them and cause minimum damage. So I guess another question I would pose is, how do you make combat engaging without it necessarily being like you're on par with what you're fighting and you can kill it? How do you make combat engaging sort of non-lethally?
So I was thinking this would also kind of apply out of combat too, but instead of just having like this one health stat, have either of you played Betrayal at House on the Hill?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
You know how they have like all the stats can go down, and then if any of them reach zero, you basically die?
Yeah.
I was wondering if that would work here.
That's real interesting.
I could see that working, sort of have like different types of enemies like drain different sort of bars.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
So yeah, like for example, sanity would probably be pretty important for this one.
Yeah. Sanity is also something implemented in Call of Cthulhu. It just kind of makes things harder to do as it goes down. But yeah, like you said, I think sanity, but I think there could be other things, like sort of like a traditional health thing, even like a base like intelligence thing, maybe like an age thing, because there are some SCPs that can like age you. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, that would account for everything that they could attack you with, ideally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with combat like this, where it's a lot about containment, I think you'll have to sort of structure combat around less so like fighting and more so just kind of like figuring out the enemy as it goes, like sort of like what its patterns are, what its weakness is, and then as you're essentially sort of avoiding things in combat, sort of developing that strategy and then implementing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's kind of like playing The Witcher 3 on the hardest difficulty. I haven't played it. But instead of putting like troll oil on your sword, you're putting like a bucket over an open door, so when they open it, the bucket falls on their head, and then you got the SCP. What I have in mind definitely puts a lot more work on the GM, but environmental and map wise like the players gotta prepare, or if they're running away, the GM has to include lots of opportunity in the world space to take a shortcut or like knock down stuff, or like, oh look, this is an ancient trap that hasn't been activated in a long time. Let me hack this 1980s computer to activate the attack robot or whatever.
Yeah, I think environment is going to be a very big factor in structuring this. Speaking of environment, a lot of SCP entries are not actually about creatures per se, but more so about locations. And sort of the meat of the article is an exploration log of sort of the space. And exploration campaigns are things that are, I've heard done a lot and seen done a lot, but I feel like usually when they're done in sort of the like Dark Souls style of exploration, where you're sort of going through this place after a huge event has happened and sort of determining through, you know, just sort of what's there, what happened to this place. Which is well and good, but I guess I'd want to ask, how do you structure exploration of an area while this strange supernatural event is going on? Like, I think there's space in SCP for doing it sort of after the weird stuff has happened, but usually I feel like you're exploring it while the weird stuff is happening, you know?
That's a tough one.
And definitely, like, while something is happening, it's a lot more stressful for the people exploring. Because it's like, oh, God, I feel like there's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, I think it's sort of about that pressure and sort of figuring out. Because I feel like part of the challenge for the players of sort of being confronted with one of these spaces is almost figuring out, like, how to navigate it. Like, having it structured so, like, even moving around is sort of a puzzle in and of itself, like sort of figuring out, like, you know, stuff like spatial warping or certain outside environmental factors can cause weird triggers in here or things like that. And I think a good way to sort of provide that pressure is to have, like, even the act of moving around be kind of a puzzle. My other big issue with a lot of exploration campaigns I've been in or seen is that usually it kind of feels like you go into a space, you roll perception or investigation, you get a lore dump, and then you move on to the next area and get the next lore dump. And I kind of want sort of the discovery to feel more engaging, like feel like more than just kind of a role, you know? But with something like 5e, where it's more sort of centered around what you can do in combat, I find it harder to sort of get that sort of exploration feeling rewarding without it kind of just being a role.
Yeah, so as a GM, exploration, I feel, is way more heavy on you than the other two pillars, in quotation marks, of D&D, roleplay, and combat. Because exploration, like, yeah, you could make a dungeon, but you'd probably want to do that beforehand. And then it's not like you can just create lore on the spot.
I mean, you can if you're good enough at improv.
Yes, but at some point, and I know from experience, this lore will become jumbled, and you will just come up with anything on the spot that sounds cool.
Yeah,
that's true.
And that might ruin things.
Agreed.
So that's why I'm always, like, afraid with, like, history checks, investigation, arcana checks, if we're just talking about D&D, is that, like, it doesn't really award a player for exploring. It rewards a player for rolling a die. So you've got to create the vague NPCs that talk about, there's a tower in the woods, and there's some undead griffins. And it's like, oh, why is there undead griffin? Then you go, and then you find that the griffins are already dead. Somebody's already killed them. I don't know where I'm going with this. Basically, where I'm trying to say is, like, you got to find out, why are there undead griffins? You might find that in the tower itself, and then you might find, like, a basement in the tower with, like, ancient artifacts of a different society that was there originally. It's less die-rolly and more like, hey, these are the hints.
It's more like piecemeal, like giving them breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That would definitely be a lot more rewarding.
So say, like, you've got, like, a couple past civilizations and that used to be where this old forest is now, and a goblin camp just moved in, and they moved into, like, an ancient ruins of them. So you got goblin culture on top of, like, the past, I don't know, ancient elven culture. And then there could be a blend if they, like, get into their books.
Yeah, and I think this is a trope that gets sort of made fun of a lot, and in a sense, rightly so, but just sort of, like, finding, like, pages of, like, journal entries just, like, throughout a place, and it gets made fun of a lot because it's, like, you know, it feels convenient and is, like, why are they writing this stuff down? But I feel like, ultimately, it still somewhat works because, you know, it's that piecemeal information. It's, like, you know, you're sort of getting fed a bit more by more, and you get a bit more invested in the sort of mystery of what happened here and what's about to happen to me here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you gotta make sure to make your narrators unreliable, because it's not fun to, like, I want to figure out this. You go to the place to figure out it, and then you figure it out. That's a two-step process. Either have that and make another question, like, have the answer ask another question, or just put it, like, a spin on things. Like, they think it's one thing, they go to confirm it, and it's like, oh no, it's not like that at all. So what is it?
Yeah.
And as a GM, I know I personally create this lore and this history, and I'm like, oh, I want to tell my players. I want to tell my players so bad. But you got to resist that. Like, you got to face the facts that, like, the army that attacked this mountain 12 years ago in a blizzard, your players either won't care or they just won't find out. You got to keep that secret until the information is really viable.
Yeah. But I will also say that still shouldn't discourage you from creating that lore. Because, like, even if it's not relevant to the world, like, I find I create a lot of lore that isn't necessarily relevant to sort of what's going on, but it kind of just helps me figure out what the world is. So I would say you shouldn't be discouraged from creating large, elaborate, huge lore. It's just a matter of telling your players when it's relevant.
Yes, and I totally encourage that kind of activity because it makes the world seem a lot more alive and lived in, and I'm definitely very much a fan of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I have 3 economy mods downloaded in Skyrim.
Oh, God. I don't know nothing about the economy. Like, I know I just said that, but, like, I don't think I could handle that. But, yeah, and I think it's important for sort of the exploration of, like, an SCP place to have a lot of backstory, but not necessarily have that be known. Some good examples of, like, weird, elaborate exploration logs that I can think of is, what's the number? I think it's 184, the architect. Like the weird sculpture thing that kind of expands whatever room it's in, TARDIS style. Well, not exactly TARDIS style. Like, it creates duplicates of the rooms, but the duplicates get weirder as they go on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple tales related to the architect that are sort of, you know, exploring, like, why does it make the rooms the way it does? How does it get into this location? Is it expanding the outside when you take it outside? That kind of stuff. I think we've said a lot of good stuff right here. Does anyone have anything that I've forgotten or, like, they particularly want to comment on in regards to sort of making an SCP-themed RPG?
I was just going to say, regarding the journal entries and stuff, did they do that one for the I don't remember I'm really bad with the numbers. I just remember what they do.
Yeah, that's fine.
The sun.
Oh, when day breaks?
Yeah, was that done via journal entry or was that just one long entry?
That was sort of like one long, like, sort of database entry with sort of intermittent bouts of, like, sort of narration about the guy reading it.
Okay.
Who's sort of avoiding the things that are now inside the facility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. A final thing, I touched upon this slightly before, but I at least personally want to throw out, is, again, like, sort of make sure the setting can sort of apply to a variety of different mediums for SCP, because it encompasses a lot of different genres. Like, it encompasses horror, it encompasses sci-fi, it encompasses fantasy. There are some canons where stuff's in, like, the Wild West or, like, deep space and whatnot. So I think mechanically you should make sure that, you know, whatever damage values you're assigning to, like, weapons or just, like, structures for map building can apply to a variety of settings, because I think that's important for SCP.
Even if you want to do a genre setting, I feel like you shouldn't be afraid to edit the SCP yourself. Make them more Wild Westy or alien-like.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the point of SCP, is to be able to sort of develop it in your own way.
Yeah, and also I feel like you shouldn't be afraid to make your own SCPs.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because they're just, like, at some points, they're just, like, other realms. They're magic items if you play D&D.
Yeah.
And to me, it gets kind of gimmicky when you got the Plague Doctor and you're fighting him or talking to him. And then SCP-173 comes out and is like, yeah, we all know about this. It's nice and all, but I personally like a fresh spin on a universe like this.
Yeah, an important thing just for the series in general is I have a lot of fun putting in references to the actual thing. And I will sometimes do stuff like that. But I still think it's important to sort of get your own stuff in there. Like, part of the reason I'm doing this is sort of creating opportunities to further develop these worlds and whatnot. I think that's a big benefit of, in addition to sort of the system that Call of Cthulhu uses, like their sort of dice system, I think a good dice system for this is a system like Powered by the Apocalypse, where the dice work can be kind of fluid, and there are a lot of different sort of, like, counter systems that you can build up. Like, in at least Masks, there's a system where you essentially level up by failing rolls a certain number of times. I think sort of blending that with sort of Call of Cthulhu mechanics is you level up a skill after you successfully use it a number of times, like roll the 2d6s or sort of use the Call of Cthulhu system and succeed a number of times, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of that, I don't know if you said already, but what type of dice would be used for this?
I think 2d6 works pretty well. I mean, I think you could sort of use a d20 system, but I feel like something like using a solid d6 and having sort of stuff for that. Or there was an RPG that Gale talked about during our Hollow Knight episode where your skill level with a certain sort of subject or skill changes the die that you use to roll it, but the point that you have to pass stays the same. Like, the example they use in that is 4, where it's like, if you have the bottom level of a skill, in order to succeed, you have to roll a 4 on a d4. But as you level up, you get the options of, like, rolling a 4 on a d6 or a d8 or a d10. And I think that would work very well for sort of the skill tree that we are forming.
Yeah.
I like that a lot better. Because it's physical, your advancement. And that has nothing to do with SCP, but in game design, it could make you feel like, oh, look, I'm at a D8 when I was a measly D4 before.
Yeah, it's a good way to let you know you're progressing. Yeah, I think probably that system, like, you could use the 2D6 as well, but I think now that I think about it, that sort of system of, like, leveling up dice as you go probably works best.
And to go back to the skill advancement, I honestly do not know how it works in Call of Cthulhu, but in my head, having a skill going up with the amount of successes you make is a lot different than the amount of fails you make, because they're going to be exponential in opposite ways. Because as you get better in a skill, the more often you'll succeed in it, meaning the more often you'll be able to upgrade that skill. Where in the beginning, if you go with the fail kind of system, you will be able to increase it more and more in the beginning, and then it'll start to slow down. So I think I prefer the fail system.
Well, I think a good way to balance out successes is making sure it's not a static amount of times you have to succeed in order to increase it, you know?
No, that's fair.
I think we have something good here. Thank you both for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having us.
And, yeah, I think we've given the viewers some good ideas to start. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you enjoyed it, please continue following us on the platform of your choice and recommend the podcast to people you know. In addition, consider following us on Instagram at the.world.dreamer. This has been Matt, and I hope you have a good day.